What does the phrase quality at scale mean to you? When I interviewed Vincent Rotolo, he made me aware of a predicament that many businesses face. The more you produce, the harder it is to keep the quality the same. Is this true for you? If you think about it, this is exceptionally true when it comes to pizza. If you want to make 500 pizzas in one day, then your dough has to be on point, your ovens have to be able to function properly for that long in order to make all those pizzas, and most importantly, your pizza makers have to be on their game. It's easy to step up to the plate knowing you only have to make one pizza. Especially if you've had a pretty easy day, especially if you're well rested, fed, all your basic needs are met, all of that, right? But how do you feel after pizza number 75? Do you still have that same enthusiasm, that same attention to detail? Now, fast forward to pizza number 475. You may be getting that energy, thinking you're close to 500. But between 75 and 475, were they as good as pizza number one? I'm sure that you are going to have some amazing pizzas in the 500 that you're making. I'm sure some of them will even turn out better than pizza number one or pizza number 500. The reality is, the quality is going to vary. Now, when it comes to manual labor, and when it's done to produce a piece of art or pay homage to old traditions, I can appreciate it. But things like that may come with a higher price tag. I do also appreciate high quality items that, because they've had their processes iterated and revolutionized, the cost of production goes down, and therefore, that item, whatever it may be produced at a quality level and also at scale. So why tell this story? I had a chance to witness what quality at scale looks like. See, I had an opportunity to experience firsthand what goes down at Cordo during their short fall harvest season. This was an awesome chance for me to learn more about a product that I use almost every day, especially for pizza. I want to give a special shout out to Cordo Olive Oil for making this special day happen and also for sponsoring the podcast. And why not give a special shout out to Stanislaus Food Products as well? If you don't know who they are, just check any pizzeria. You'll see their beautiful red sauce everywhere. Cordo is actually owned and operated by the same farming family, so I want to send them some love as well for making this happen. And I'll use this opportunity to prime you listeners that you'll hear some comparisons between the tomato harvests and the olive harvests, so hopefully that context is helpful. Now, in today's episode, I'm going to share a few things. One, I'll share my time with you all at the Grove, as I was able to capture some audio while there, and hopefully give you a fun taste of what I experienced audibly. Two, I'll give you some super quick insights from Laura, Chris, and John about what they learned. And yes, that is Laura Meyer of Pizzeria Delora, Chris Decker of Truly Pizza, and John Arena of Metro Pizza. And then three, at the very end, I'll give you my insights on what I learned and tie in some of my final thoughts about quality at scale, and some of the things that they do at Cordo Olive Oil that pizzerias could apply in their businesses. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show, and remember to always ask, what's good dough? Okay, for the next minute or so, I'm going to go ahead and give you a taste of what it was like to be on an olive harvester. And an olive harvester is, you guessed it, something that harvests olives. But more specifically, it's a piece of machinery that uses vibrating rods to continuously pick olives from the branches, sort of mimicking a hand harvest, but again, done at scale. Okay, here it goes.
Oh my goodness.
Don't worry, I'm just holding on to you.
Oh yeah, please.
Please, please don't fall down.
I got you.
You're in the two safest spots. I'm worried about you.
I'm okay. I'm holding on to
don't
something.
Don't lose your balance.
I won't. We're going really fast, though. I'm scared. Oh, my goodness.
It will pick up.
my phenol level dropped off.
So let's go ahead and break down what's going on. So this harvester is really, really tall. And it's tall enough to go over the olive trees. And as it's driving over it, its function is to gently pick up the olives from the tree, collect them inside the belly of the machine, then use a bucket system and conveyor to stream the olives to be collected in a gondola, which is basically a bin that is driving alongside the machine. It's pretty dope to see. And honestly, that is part of the key as to why Cordo has an 8-hour process from grove to cellar. Because as soon as they fill up that gondola, they're off to the races. It drives on over to the mill, which is only a few miles away, and they get it going to preserve the quality taste of the olives. Now, I don't know if you've ever picked fruit before. And that might be a silly thing to say, but I bet there are people listening who haven't. I have a grapefruit tree in my backyard, and I noticed that when the fruit are overripe, they're super easy to pull off. I mean, they even fall off themselves at a certain point, right? But I also noticed that when you pick them at its peak, it's firmly attached to the tree and you have to use a bit of force. So for any olive oil company looking to produce a quality olive oil, they will always pick their olives during the short fall harvest season. But that has traditionally been very difficult and expensive and unable to do it at scale until Cordo revolutionized the game. But yeah, olive oil producers do pick their olives in the winter season past their peak because it's easier to pull off the tree. And that leads to a commodity product. Trust me, you don't want that flavor on your pizza. Okay, back to the grove.
We're going to stop. No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. We're going down.
Okay.
That's too short.
That was too short?
Yeah. I thought we were going to go across the whole row.
Well, we could.
It's okay.
And come back there again. But it's kind of cool seeing it from a different perspective, too.
Thank you. That was fun.
Is that fun?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. It was a little scary.
You know, this isn't abnormal. This is normal. It'll do some damage. It'll take some of these off.
Yeah.
So it's our job to make sure that they're hedged properly before the season so that they're not too big. Because if you get a shoot that comes out like this, right, it'll break it.
Uh-huh.
So as the trees mature, and I don't know how, this grove doesn't seem that old. As they mature and kind of grow together more, they'll kind of fill in more like a hedgerow.
Are there multiple speeds? Like, could they go faster?
No.
Or it's just one speed? Okay.
Not a very fast process.
No.
Better than hand harvesting.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought he was just going slow for us.
No, that was overdrive.
And then when we get to the factory later, are we going to see actual sorting of the olives?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool. So we'll see how much is left over.
That's why I brought you all here, so that you can help me with the hand sort.
Okay, perfect. No. Put us to work, right?
There's minimal labor at the mill. It's mainly mechanized.
Oh, is it? Mm-hmm. I see. Okay.
Tomato canneries are different. There's a lot of things you can touch. You know, human hands can touch and harvest.
But, yeah.
Olives, it's all mechanized optical sorting because they're so small. You couldn't have anybody doing that, right?
And how long did it take to get to the mechanized sorting, or is that how it was started?
We developed it at Cordo.
Okay.
And so it's a little more in the industry now, but the units that we're using, I'll kind of show you, they're unique.
I see. So in Spain, they were hand sorting it in the past?
No, there's no sorting, basically.
Oh, no sorting. It's just everything goes, even the leaves.
Leaves will get knocked out, but leaves and sticks, basically. They wouldn't optically or color sort the fruit.
I see.
The really, like, the best mills in the world that make stuff that's gold medal winning, and they go out and they kill it. I mean, you're talking, there are mills that will harvest for 3 hours a night between midnight and 3 because it's the perfect temperature.
Yeah.
And then they'll go and they'll hand pick and they'll go and fill their bins and they'll bring it in and they'll have them in refrigerated units to where they're perfect temperatures. So when they come in the mill, it's the right temperature.
Well, it's like when we compete.
Yes, same thing.
You're trying to control every little thing.
They're making dough in the sink in the hotel room?
Obviously. Trash can olive oil is best.
Yes. So there are mills that do ridiculous things in order to capture this.
Yeah.
But I want to, so I love where you're going, like where the industry is going. And it's interesting because...
Well, it definitely seems like there's going to be, like, we're at the, amidst a revolution right now, but it's going to undergo a second one in 5 to 10?
I think it's still way early. I think we're still way early.
We're taking bets.
No, well, Dino thought 30.
State of the world right
Dino
now.
Dino thought 30 to 50 years for this to start to catch.
Yeah. I mean,
like, in this whole, like, looking far out, like, hey.
I mean, it's kind of a good thing that it's Spain and it's not, you know, like, how the wheat crop is so heavily affected right now because of war.
Look at Ukraine for sunflower oil.
Well, it's, I mean, it's just, I mean, you know, but we're also on the cusp of another war.
Oh, big time.
Another global war.
Yes.
So it's just, it's, who knows what, but the fact that we have such good quality stuff here in our backyard, it's just, people might say, oh, it costs a lot now, but.
Just who knows?
Just wait.
Just wait.
Just wait.
Yeah, it's hard to say. The more interesting part, so like this part of our equation is actually really fun because it's all about the fruit, just like the tomato harvest.
Yeah.
Right? Like, capture it. Rush it there, have it milled within a matter of hours so you capture those fresh fruit notes. The harder part of our job is actually keeping it fresh until you get it.
Yeah.
And well, that's where the industry, we think, is going to be light years until it catches up.
Yeah.
Catches up to you guys.
It just catches up to any sort of standard. When you make olive oil right now, you're grading the grade of extra virgin as you produce it.
Yeah.
After that,
whatever happens,
there's no
to it.
They don't. Yeah, there's
right.
no accountability through the logistics channel.
Okay.
So it's, when we milled it, it was extra virgin, which is a really wide scale anyway.
Is there any benefits to aging? Just, I mean, I know that there's degradation, but like with wheat, there is a benefit as it ages.
So the trees know, the fruit know, will produce the same similar flavor profiles off the trees as age. On the oil side, it's never as good as day one. Never.
Okay.
Now we'll go through racking. I'll get into some stuff at the mill, but it's not like wine. It's more like juice. Like whenever I, who was it in LA? One of the chefs we talked to in LA, it's been years, but he basically said, you know, I don't, the one thing he took away from coming through years ago was I treat my olive oil like I treat my expensive red wine now. Like I don't, if I'm going to open that bottle, I'm going to use it right away. And
yeah.
It's no different. I mean, once it gets off the tree and milled, and then we produce olive oil, all of your energy has to go into protecting it from elements. And light, heat, and air destroy it. We could take a bottle that we'll produce today, and I could give it to you and say, hey, when you get back down to Dana Point, I'd like you to put that bottle outside in the sun for a day or two. And then I want you to ship it back to me. And then we'll test it. It won't even grade extra virgin.
Yeah, wow.
That's how fast UV light will destroy it.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Idea obviously is as you shake them, they close around whatever tree, post, pole is in there, so the olives don't fall to the ground. Down to the shaker plates, shaker pans, these actually shake, they vibrate, so it moves the olives into the bucket system. Bucket system being there, or here, right?
Mm-hmm.
That bucket system is constantly moving to the back, and then you can see them, they rise up and they dump on that cross conveyor that you guys saw when you were riding back there and then into gondola. I mean, we're only harvesting about an acre an hour. So, you know, we do nine, you know, breaks. We run 10 hour days. They can harvest about 9 acres. That's about all they can do. So it's a very slow process, really. But in order to do a good job, get good fruit removal, as you can tell, harvested versus not harvested, you have to go slow.
Yeah.
1 ton of olives is, we only get about 17 to 18% of oil out of that. Okay? So when we talk about a ton, we're getting about 35 to 37 gallons of oil from 1 ton of olives. So an orchard that's yielding 5 to 6 tons, we're getting somewhere around 200 gallons to the acre.
So depending on what the end product is, so like that, if you're harvesting a ton of tomatoes, you're selling almost a ton of product in some cases, depending on what the product is.
Right, there's no loss, right?
Right.
We're harvesting a ton and only getting
17% yield.
17% of that, yeah.
Right.
The rest is going out. So
that's kind of what was filtering through my head.
Yeah, like, so
I'm for, just translating to dollars.
The easier way to do it is for every 10 loads we bring into the mill, eight and a half go out and go to go to cattle feed.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's we don't call it waste. We call it opportunity, really, is what we do, because right now it's cattle feed and it's good. You know, it's usable, but we're working on some other stuff to try to.
For the cattle fed, olives that are cattle fed, are they marked up when they are sold in steaks, or is it just going into a bunch of different things that are fed to cattle?
It's mixed. So it's mixed with grape, pomace, with wheat. It's actually if you guys go to the mill and you see it, it's like an oatmeal that comes out, and so it's very hard. The consistency is difficult to work with, so they have to mix it with other things to be able to feed it.
I've heard of restaurants that do steaks that say, we've only fed olives, I wasn't sure.
Yeah. So no, we haven't tapped into that market yet. But
maybe
you never
in the future.
Know. You never know.
What does the color purple indicate for olives?
It's just think about an apple that's on a tree. It's fermentation is what it is. It's the fermentation process that begins in any piece of fruit.
I see.
Whether it's an apple, a cherry, orange, whatever it is. Over time, fermentation kicks in. Think about an apple on a tree, right?
So happy.
When it's crisp, crunchy, you have to snap it off the tree, right? It's hard to get off the tree. It's good. It's good to eat, right? You can leave that apple on there for 3-4 months, okay? And technically, and it'll eventually fall off, right? And you can still eat that, but it's mealy, it's musty, busty. Okay. Same thing. It's old. It's fermented. Olives do the same exact thing. When they're green like this, they're really at the peak, right? You gotta think of it that way. We're talking about freshness. It's really a fresh picked olive, right? And so now when it turns that hint of violet, purple, black, it's overripe.
It's done.
Yeah, okay. And it starts to lose all those beneficial things that you're looking for in an olive oil.
That makes sense, thank you.
Yeah.
All right. We have no other questions for Paul. I'm going to bring us over to the little baby grove around the corner.
So here's a little fun fact. Cordo strives to harvest when the olives are mostly green, with just a hint of violet. This indicates that the olives have accumulated oil and developed their full flavor and aromatics, and that the fruit is packed with antioxidants called polyphenols, which are key for producing high-quality olive oil. Kind of like when you do a window pane test on your dough. You take a piece of dough and stretch it out between your hands and see if the light can shine through. And so it's important to realize that these visual cues are very important when it comes to making dough, and olive oil is no different. So Cordo actually strives to see these little hints of purple on their olives, denoting that it's go time. Okay, now we're going to head on over to the mill. We just made it to the mill, and oh my goodness, it smells like fresh herbs. It's ridiculous. So I'm not allowed to talk about what was going down at the factory, nor was I able to record, but if you want to get a small glimpse, just go to YouTube and search Cordo olive oil, and you'll get a little taste for what it's like to be inside through some of the content that they've recorded. And now we'll take this time to hear from Laura, Chris, and John to hear what they have to say about what they learned from this whole experience.
Yes, they're thinking about the bottom line in terms of health of the business, but at the end of the day, they're still more thinking about getting a great product to restaurants. And that's their driving force. And it's just refreshing to be able to go in and, yeah, have some fun and talk about it. But then they get into the nitty gritty and they want to know as much as we do.
Chris, I missed everything that you said because I did not press record.
I got it all. Say it all again.
Yeah. Anything that you learned today?
Well, I think it's the one thing that I notice is, and continue to notice every time I come out, is the care and consideration that goes into the product. You know, you kind of lose that when you go back to work and you're opening up that sauce can, or you're, you know, pouring the olive oil out of the box, you don't really, you know, you kind of forget how much care and consideration goes into what they do. And they care about every aspect of that business and how it's going to affect you and your business. And I grow a deeper appreciation for that every time I get to come out.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you both. John, can I ask you a quick question for my podcast, a quick segment?
Sure.
What did you learn today?
I learned that attention to detail is the most important thing. Being totally focused on quality, not having any distractions, where the only question that you have to ask is this what's best to make the best possible product? Not how much more is it going to cost me? Not is it worth the extra effort? Just we're dedicated to quality. Is this going to make my product better? And that makes all your other decisions easy.
Beautiful. Thank you. Now, I can't end this podcast without giving you all my thoughts. And that is, my whole perspective of Cordo olive oil changed. Just to quickly tie in some of my initial reactions of the product, I thought tasting Cordo olive oil for the first time was an absolute game changer. And that's because I thought olive oil was supposed to taste greasy. But after I did the virtual tasting with them, something that they offer free to operators, pop-up caterers, pizzeria owners, I finally understood why olive oil as an ingredient was added on to pizza. Not to make your pizza more greasy, but to give it freshness and flavor, to give it a different aroma. Having been to the factory and seeing the process, I now understand that not every olive oil company is able to do this, and therefore not every olive oil is quality. It's crazy to think that we have something so good and is available to us at a price point that is reasonable. Now, I just want to quickly bring it back to that conversation about quality at scale. And I can't help but think that in order to produce quality at scale, well, you have to use a little bit of automation, or you have to iterate the process, or you have to revolutionize the way you do things. Is there a place for doing things the old-fashioned way? Yes. But is it scalable? And while I didn't record a conversation I had with Chris Decker and John Arena, we did have a quick discussion during breakfast the next morning after the harvest, right before heading home. And we talked about staffing. Clearly, if you run a pizzeria that requires more than one person to run it, you need staff, right? And staff are part of the equation when it comes to being able to produce quality. Do you have enough people to run your pizzeria smoothly? Do you have someone at the ovens watching every pizza closely? Do you have someone making pizza, making sure that every pizza is pushed out nicely and topped evenly? Do you have someone at the register checking on people, taking their payments, all of that good stuff? Traditionally, that's what you would need at a pizzeria. But in today's world, well, for starters, it's hard to find people who want to do this type of work. And then two, part of that finding people is, can you afford people to do this type of work? With the minimum wage going up, with the limited hours that restaurants have chosen to open due to differing priorities, lifestyle changes, or just market shifts. I mean, we've seen it. We've heard the articles. We've listened to it on the podcast. Staffing is hard. So are we at a point in time where we have to iterate our process or revolutionize the way we do things? I think we're sort of already in that time, and many of us are scared of how it's going to turn out. Many of us fear that we will lose what's good, but I don't know. After visiting Cordo Olive Oil and seeing how they were able to produce quality at scale, yes, there were lots of people involved in making great olive oil happen. But yes, they were the innovators. They were the early adopters. And they were rewarded. So, if you're in that in-between, I don't know ground, I hope you take this episode as an amazing lesson to continue to iterate and revolutionize your process, but only if you feel like you have to. I appreciate you listening, and I hope you enjoyed this one. If you did,
please remember to share. I appreciate you. I love you. Till next time. Peace.